court is ready to hear argument in 070119 in re BP Products North America, Inc.
May it please the court, Ms. McKillop will present argument for the relator. The relator has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Court. The two issues that we brought to the court today, the Rule 11 interpretation and the APEX. To lawyers, to judges, the APEX is more fascinating. Perhaps to litigants, the more pedestrian issue of the interpretation of the Rule 11 agreement is a little bit more important. Unless the court prefers, I would like to talk very briefly about the Rule 11 question first.
I would prefer that you explain why the case is not moot.
Be happy to, Your Honor. And I'm sure the question is whether it's moot because John Brown is no longer CEO of BP Products or BP PLC. What I suggest that the court does is take the analysis and the ruling by the El Paso healthcare case and apply it to the rest of the state. In that case,
I certainly will.
The El Paso case, the CEO, the high-level manager, had moved on. And the question in that case was presented directly, should the APEX rule apply to that APEX official once he had moved on? The El Paso court said that it should.
Well, what if we disagree with that? I mean, how long does this cloud or this cloak of protection follow a CEO or someone similar situated?
A very good question. Let me present two alternative formulations of a rule when a CEO leaves the current position that he's in. The first one is the one that would apply particularly to this case, and that is when a CEO goes from Company A to Company B, and he's still a high-level official. And that's what happened in this case. Although Brown no longer works for BP PLC, in September he took a job as a CEO-type person for a private equity firm in the U.S. and in London, and is working for them. Now, let me give you the reason why I think that if he moves from Company A to Company B, APEX should still apply.
Well, he left in May of 2007. He went to Company B in September. So in June it became moot, then it revived?
No, not at all, Your Honor. If I can get to that second, that's my second iteration of the rule. If I could just first explain why this first proposition that I've given to you makes sense. The whole reason for the APEX rule is to prevent harassment to the CEO, asking for a CEO deposition when he really doesn't have anything to add to the lawsuit, and also undue burden on the company by having a CEO constantly deposed in litigation.
Those are all great concepts. I think they work for the most part. But here, as I understand it, you had a CEO who, from what I read in these briefs, took himself out of that cloak of protection by having a press conference, by talking to the mayor, and by doing things that it seems to me that a CEO perhaps wouldn't do.
Well, not necessarily in the given particular circumstance. And if I can answer the one question first, and then get back to you on the PR aspect of it that the plaintiffs have raised, let me very quickly go back to the question that Justice Jefferson had, and that is, if we have him going from Company A to Company B, under the APEX rules, he can't be deposed when he's the CEO of Company A. On Company A litigation, then why does it make sense for him to be deposed on Company A litigation when he's CEO of Company B?
Because it has no impact on Company A any longer. It doesn't disrupt their activities. He's not leading the charge at Company A.
But we still do have the harassment value to the CEO, again, remembering that this only applies when he has no unique or superior knowledge. And let me just say, Justice Jefferson, that I agree that there should be a broader rule. Let me give you my second iteration of the rule. The second iteration is what the El Paso court said, and that is that we should have the APEX rule govern CEOs and have it judged as of the time they were the CEO of Company A that I used before they leave. And let me give you the reasons that I think that makes sense. His knowledge does not increase when he walks out of the door. His knowledge still is the lower knowledge of no unique or superior knowledge. Number two, how does it make sense that we have the harassment value and indeed, Justice Jefferson, the undue burden aspect that we have when he's at Company A, isn't it worse to Company B to have their CEO pulled out and deposed?
Well, Company B hasn't intervened to my knowledge anyway in this case.
No, sir, not at all. And I'm talking more about general rules. So logically, I think that you have to have a rule that applies the apex to the CEO.
Yeah, I take your argument, yeah, and I know you want to get to the merits of the apex. So why don't you explain how Mr. Brown did not have unique or superior knowledge?
Certainly, and going back to Justice Medina's question about the things that happened during the process of this, if I could just add one last thing to the reasoning of why I think the apex should continue. The value of a CEO's deposition as a litigation trophy or a severance, settlement leverage is not exactly the same when he moves on, but it's not gone. It's not gone at all. Now, let me move on then to the apex issues, and I'm not going to tell the court what the apex rules are. The court knows what the apex rules are. Let me see if I can apply them to this particular case, because no litigant here is asking the court to do away with apex or to change it in any way, simply to apply it to this particular instance. Let me first answer the question that you had about the PR or talking to people. One thing that Alcatel says is that the importance of a case or importance of an incident to a particular company is not enough to automatically imbue the CEO with unique or superior knowledge. And when you have a very important event, a very important bad event like this that happens to a company, then the CEO needs to go talk to his employees. He needs to be a presence there. He needs to ask them how they are and how they are doing. He did that immediately after the accident. And then I don't know if what you were talking about was what was happening after the accident. But then about a year or so later after the accident, during the Rule 11 issue when it came up, or during around that time, after a lot of other unpleasant and not good things had happened to this company, the Alaska pipeline issues, some trading issues, then the CEO did again go and talk to his own employees and talk to them about how the company was doing and what he saw the future of the company being. But that's not a PR campaign. A CEO is supposed to do those sorts of things. He's supposed to go talk to his people, and that's precisely what was happening here. Another thing that the cases tell us, Alcatel again, that receiving reports from others does not imbue a CEO with a unique or superior knowledge. And there was evidence here that he received reports from various people, but again, that's not enough under Texas law. One other thing the plaintiffs talked about, and again, what I'm trying to do is take precisely what they've said, agree that it's factual, and apply it to the law. The next point straddles really two principles of Texas law, and that is that the CEO's ultimate responsibility for corporate decisions or participating in a decision that's important to the company does not imbue the CEO automatically with unique or superior knowledge.
Is there evidence that Mr. Brown, prior to the accident, paid special attention to the Texas City refinery in regards to safety?
There is a question about that. Let's say it's true. I don't think the evidence is that it is completely true, but let's say it's true. Then under Alcatel and all the other cases, the fact that a CEO is receiving a report on Texas City separately, let's say, from another of the refineries in North America doesn't give him any particular special knowledge about Texas City. It's just that he's looking at it. Harkening back to what I was saying about ultimate responsibility and participating in decisions, what that applies to is the fact that when Brown came to Texas City the day after the accident, he said that the company accepted responsibility for what happened on their premises and the company planned to compensate fully anyone that their actions had injured, which is what they've been trying to do for the last 2.5 years. He was acting as a CEO. He was speaking for his company. He wasn't giving new knowledge. He wasn't saying anything other than what the company had decided to do. I'm not really sure this is much of an issue anymore since the briefing. We've tried part of a case at this point, and we've made very clear that BP is not disputing its responsibility for this particular incident.
Let's talk about this Rule 11 agreement.
Yes, sir.
How can a Rule 11 agreement circumvent a trial court's order?
The Rule 11 agreement is a simple...
Here the trial judge ordered the deposition of the CEO, correct? And then there was a
correct.
Rule 11 agreement sometime after that.
Correct. And if I can, in answering your question, let me put, although it's in the brief, maybe I can put it together a little bit better for you on the Rule 11. And I also have to tell you, you all know, that BP can win either through the APEX or through the enforcement of the Rule 11. So the Rule 11 to us is crucially important here, too, and appreciate your asking about it. Let me just give you a thumbnail sketch of what was going on. We had a September 18 trial setting. On July 31, at the very end of discovery, in fact, we would say after discovery was cut off, we got a deposition notice for John Brown. August 28, the trial court, after briefing and hearings, the trial court ordered the depositions of both Manzoni, the number two guy in refining, and John Brown, the CEO. 3 days later, the parties entered into a Rule 11 agreement because parties don't have to take depositions, even if the trial court says they can take depositions. It's still their option as to whether they're going to take the deposition. We agreed to present Manzoni. They agreed to forbear from taking Brown or other management people because they also sent out a deposition notice of one of the board members. We present Manzoni for deposition on September 8, 10 days before trial. The plaintiffs announce that they are satisfied with what they've gotten. On September 15, the Friday before the Monday trial setting, there's a hearing. The plaintiffs have added a new claim. We ask for continuance because we haven't had the opportunity to do discovery on the claim. The trial court continues the case to November 6, and guess what happens on Wednesday, September the 20th. We get a deposition notice for John Brown. Now, there's nothing to interpret here on this Rule 11. It's clear. There's no ambiguity. It's an easy contract to read. If you look at the facts that they have brought forward in trying to say that there were new facts that came out in Manzoni's deposition that show unique and superior, because under the contract it's unique and superior, not unique or superior knowledge of Brown, there's nothing new. The appointment of James Baker, that was in the press months before. The fact that there was an email talking about, Justice Jefferson mentioned that John Brown might have been looking at Texas City separately. In Mr. Holman's brief, he points out that particular email had been presented in discovery, produced in March of 06, 9 months before Manzoni's deposition. The last thing that they argue is somewhat illogical. They say, well, since Manzoni couldn't answer all of our questions, the only other person who can answer those questions is John Brown. Well, that's illogical. Just because one person doesn't know something, you can't then take the next step and say that the only other person in the corporation who knows that information is John Brown. The next thing that the court did was simply toss out the Rule 11 altogether. Now, the Rule 11 is a contract. And in Texas, to get out from under a contract, a party's got to plead and prove some sort of avoidance. There are various things mentioned here. When we asked the trial court what she meant and what she was doing and what facts are based on, we really didn't get much of an answer. In the plaintiff's brief, they don't really do much to answer it other than to do what Justice Medina said and lob this PR campaign. Well, you can call it a PR campaign, and you can spend
it
however
not what
you
I
want
said.
To.
It was what, that's what
no,
was
no, no, no.
Right.
I understand what they said. Yes, sir. What they're saying, but all it was John Brown going from place to place in North America and talking to his employees in closed meetings about what was happening with his company and how they were going to try to make it a better company, and talking to his employees as a CEO would when a company has been through some hard times. And I don't think that doing that is a PR campaign where John Brown's trying to do something to the press. And speaking to the Financial Times, to me, is not a PR campaign.
Mr. Brown's personal visit to the accident site and talking with some of the employees and families, did that provide unique information about the accident that perhaps others didn't have?
No, sir, I don't think so. I mean, you could tell me what happened in oral argument here yesterday, and that wouldn't give me unique or superior knowledge about what happened in oral argument yesterday.
Not necessarily, I agree. In this case, Is there any indication in the record that Mr. Brown learned things that perhaps others who had been deposed didn't know?
No, sir. There's nothing at all. It's only the bare fact that he was there and he spoke to some of the employees.
Counsel, the rules encourage the parties to reach agreements on discovery matters. Is it your position that the trial court cannot, for good cause, set aside or ignore an agreement that the parties reach on discovery?
I think there are instances when they can. The defendant and the plaintiff can't reach an agreement to bypass a trial setting, you know, a schedule that the court has under. The difference here is it's a deposition. It's not something that the parties are required to do. It's something the parties decide to do in litigation. And so I think when you have a discovery dispute over whether a deposition is going to be taken, that is something that the parties can resolve among themselves.
Was that Rule 11 agreement approved by the court?
It was filed with the court, which is what we're supposed to do.
Court's knowledge?
Because you know, I don't know when.
191 says party can't merely by agreement modify a court order without court's concurrence.
I can't say that we presented it to the court to approve until the new notice of deposition came in, and at that point we did ask the court to approve it through our motion for protection, and that was when the court set it aside.
Further questions? Thank you, Counselor. The court is now ready to hear argument from the real party in interest.
May it please the court, Mr. Kuhn will present argument for the real party in interest.
May it please the court, counsel, Mrs. Gauntney. Your Honors, I'm not the most astute at handling this matter, so bear with me some. I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night, so maybe I can make it through it. But one of the last times I handled one of these appeals was actually in front of Justice Galtney many years ago in the Fifth Circuit. It's an honor to have you here again, sir. This is a simple issue, in my opinion. It involves Apex doctrine and whether or not you can go depose a CEO. And in this case, whether or not they've waived it by the conduct of the CEO, and the very fact that he's no longer the CEO moots all these issues. I fully appreciate, as the representative of the Plaintiff Steering Committee and the discovery that's been undertaken in this case, which has involved travels around the world, depositions of people from all walks of life, with respect to what happened out there. It was a horrible tragedy. And in this case, we're not doing this to harass a CEO. The purpose of the Apex Doctrine is to protect the CEO from harassing depositions, from repetitious depositions. The Sam Walton cases, where Walmart was always being noted, Sam Walton's deposition, every little slip and fall. There's very unique facts here. This is something that doesn't happen every day.
What specifically took the CEO out of the Apex protection?
Out of Apex, in this case, many, Your Honor. One is the fact that he's no longer there takes him out of Apex.
So you would argue that the El Paso case is wrong?
Yes, sir, to the extent that's what it says. I'm not even really sure what it says because I read that case, and I didn't have even a good understanding of the timeline. It appeared when they noticed his deposition he was already moving, and so I'm not really sure that the case was really clear on that particular issue. I know it was cited, but in reading, I'm not sure they're that clear with respect to the timeline and whether or not the trial court made the ruling of the fact that he was departing and took that into consideration in the ruling in the first place. Here at the time of the notice, it was unbeknownst to us that this CEO was, in fact, going to resign. And the trial court made its findings. And in this case, it's important to remember, you know, what that burden of proof is on the petitioners to set aside those trial court's findings. And she's had hundreds of hearings, it seems like, certainly hundreds of motions and dozens of hearings over the last couple of years.
Let's assume it's not moot. Then you were going to list the information that Mr. Brown had, I think you were planning to, that was unique, that would justify an Apex deposition.
Yes, sir. There are a number of things that are unique. First and foremost, at the very beginning, the day of the plant explosion, it was the afternoon of March 23rd. He was there by the next morning. He spent the day there. He interviewed the people that were there.
But you didn't learn that in the Manzoni deposition.
No, sir, we did not know that. But in terms of the things that he has superior knowledge about, if we're talking about all of them, He was there. He injected himself in the litigation from the very beginning.
I thought your agreement was to not take the deposition based on what you knew so far and only change your mind if you learn something new in the Manzoni deposition.
Yes, sir. And again, now we're talking about two different issues, Your Honor. First is whether or not we're to discuss all the things he had notice of with respect to whether or not the Rule 11 is applicable. If the Rule 11 is applicable, there's different standards that would apply to some of the issues that this court will be faced with. So if we're talking about what he knew just in terms of Apex.
Well, let's finish that, then let's come back to that other issue, which I'm also interested in.
Yes, sir. Well, we know that for whatever reasons, he personally monitored Texas City Refinery's process in progress for a number of years. We don't know why. Couldn't get an explanation from anyone as to with 18 refineries around the world why he always looked at Texas City separately and treated it separately. We know that he was personally involved in a number. Yes, sir.
On that point, any information he would have about Texas City came from someone else, people below him, right?
Yes, sir.
He wasn't documents. Out there turning the gadgets, operating the machinery,
agreed.
Starting and stopping the refinery.
Agreed.
So anything he knew came from someone else.
The information he was provided with would have come from other sources, but the reasons he wanted to monitor that so closely and personally is very different. That would be his knowledge.
But that would have come from at least maybe he formed independent opinions. I don't know, but any information that would serve as the basis of that would have come from someone else, wouldn't it?
Yes, sir. The information would have been. The question is, why did he want this information separate? What was it he was looking for? And the reason that's important is that we found out through the discovery in this case that there were lots of warning signals at Texas City about the potential for a catastrophic event, both internal consulting investigations that were done there as well as external. Consulting.
So you can prove all of those things. Why do we need to know? Somebody had to tell him those things, give him those things, so discover all those things. Ask all those people, what'd you ask? Why do we need him?
Yes, sir. We have asked many of those. I'm not saying you cannot go to every other person in the world involved in this, but at some point.
Well, the whole idea of unique is that there's not anybody else to go to. But if he's doing all this because somebody told him you need to watch this place, go ask all those people.
Was there a committee that made safety decisions at BP, or was it the CEO, or how did that work?
We're not sure exactly what it was that he reviewed and what he formed the basis of. We do know that there's many different committees at many different levels within the BP infrastructure, both at the plant level, the regional level, and the international level.
In other words, one reason he may be looking at this separately from all the other refineries is because he has a decision to make. He knows that there are problems, and his decision may be the factor that increases safety.
Absolutely. And that's what's important about this case. Lord Brown was a very hands-on CEO and had a unique and fascinating interest with respect to Texas City in particular.
But that argument would apply to all cases. All CEOs in the final analysis make the final decision.
Yes, sir, they do, but there's rarely the circumstances where that CEO is expressed such a keen interest in a particular operation of a particular unit. He's injected himself into the operations and the budgets at Texas City.
But counsel,
and so for that, that's just one of many reasons. Yes, sir.
But counsel, you knew much of this information, if not all of it, before you entered into the Rule 11 agreement.
Yes, sir. And again, I think we're talking about all the different reasons and then separately Rule 11, but I would agree with that.
And the court did not actually order the deposition taken, did it? I mean, she essentially said that you could take the deposition, and you chose instead to enter into the Rule 11 agreement.
Yes, sir. And then as a result of taking Manzoni and other conduct of BP after taking Manzoni, the judge set aside that Rule 11. And the judge has been very active with respect to setting the tone and tenor of the litigation. In fact,
it looks like from her order she's mad at him for doing this pretrial, trying to tamper with the jury pool. It
yes,
has nothing to do with what Manzoni said.
It's probably based on a myriad of issues. She understood what Manzoni said. She'd been briefed on that. She also was understandably upset and concerned that after she had admonished BP throughout the litigation to be careful with respect to its public relations campaigns and how to address them in terms of massaging public sentiment about the facts of the case, that Lord Brown injected himself back into the case on the eve of trial, and that BP sent out mailers to thousands of Galveston County residents, private communications on the eve of trial,
so
that she had admonished them not to do.
How does the punishment fit the crime there?
Well, You would have to ask the judge as to what all of her motivations were.
No. But on sanctions orders, the judge had better say it.
Yes, well, that's not a sanction.
It looks like one to me. I mean, she's quite clear here. The reason I'm doing this is because y'all are this company's tampering with the pump. So I'll show them. Make your British sir show up here for a depo.
It could be for those things. It could be also be the mere fact that Lord Brown continued to interject himself personally into the litigation. He was not just out talking to his employees and rallying the troops and making them feel better. On the eve of trial, the very first trial, it was the Roe case, the little lady, young lady right here who lost both of her parents. On the eve of that trial, there was a lot of international coverage of the event. And Lord Brown then starts crisscrossing the continents. And he doesn't just talk to his employees. He gives stories to Fortune magazine. He gives stories to the Financial Times. He goes out and tells the BP version over and over.
Back to the Rule 11 agreement. I can see where a Rule 11 agreement binds the parties to the signatories to it when it's filed in court.
Yes, sir.
And I can even see that in most circumstances a trial court is going to enforce a Rule 11 agreement. But aren't there circumstances where a trial court has reasons not to abide by a Rule 11 agreement, either because discovery was incomplete or because circumstances have changed or because the court believes that just the Rule 11 agreement doesn't further justice or fairness in the case? Doesn't a trial court have that sort of discretion to manage their own trial, their own docket?
Well, absolutely. The litigants can't control the pace of the discovery. Those go to the court, and if either side takes issue with that, then they can appeal.
What if there's a Rule 11 agreement where both sides say we don't want to go to trial on January 1st, but the trial court says, I see that Rule 11 agreement, but I believe this case is ready for trial. It's gone on too long. I'm ordering trial to proceed. Would a mandamus issue against that judge?
You may have a mandamus against him. I would presume that under most circumstances it would fail.
Well, can a trial court order the parties to take a deposition?
Yes, sir, they did. In this case, actually, part of this PR campaign resulted in mailers that went to many of the...
Can the trial court order the parties to take deposition of A and B and C and
yes,
D upon pain of dismissal of this case or sanctions?
Certainly she...
What authority do you have for that?
Well, I'm assuming, she has, I'll say she, in this case it's she, but the court has a lot of authority with respect to the
type
of...
What if the parties wanted to go to trial without any depositions? Does the trial judge have the authority to say, you're not going to trial unless you take those depositions?
I agree with that, Your Honor, but in terms of other issues, in this case, in fact, she ordered depositions to be undertaken. It was her impression that BP violated her specific rules with respect to private communications to the jury pool on the eve of trial. And they sent out thousands of letters to the residents of Galveston County, including those that were on the jury pool, about their side of the story on the eve of the trial. And she found out about this, and sua sponte ordered the parties to appear, and the people in the public relations campaign at BP that were responsible for it, and then ordered us to go take depositions, including those persons involved, as part of an exploration into the sanctions issue.
She can order you to come to court.
Yes, sir.
She can order you to be there and testify.
Yes, sir.
But do you think she has the authority to say, go to New Orleans and take a deposition, and if you don't, then bad things are going to happen. I'm going to sanction you.
You know, Judge, maybe that would, Your Honor, maybe that would extend their authority, but I would be reticent to be the one to take them to task.
I understand. And what if the parties agree that we're not going to take a deposition? They enter a written agreement, and your position is she can say, regardless of the parties, who it's their case, that she can say, you're not going to, if you don't take the deposition, despite your agreement, the litigants' agreement, if you don't take the deposition, I'm going to sanction both of you. And you think that's not an abuse of discretion?
I think that, again, it would be case by case, but I think under many circumstances it would be an abuse of discretion, yes, sir.
So you don't dispute that the judge voided the Rule 11 agreement?
In our opinion, she did.
And are you saying that the reason was the PR campaign, in her view, that there were attempts to taint the jury pool?
I'm saying that there's evidence that was one of the factors based on her comments and based on the specific findings in her order. However, there were a number of issues that came up through the Manzoni deposition that did not resolve underlying and key questions we had in the case. four instances.
Before we get to those, one other potential basis, I guess, for voiding the Rule 11 agreement. The order says BP made misrepresentations that induced plaintiffs to enter the Rule 11 agreement. I don't see where those are set out. Did the judge say what those were?
Yes, sir. The misrepresentations were primarily the same ones that were the basis of the apex all along, and that is Lord Brown's a busy man. He doesn't have time to get involved in talking to lawyers and explaining what he knew, if anything, with respect to this explosion and the conduct of BP. And in spite of that, which was a partial inducement into entering into this agreement, after it was entered into, Lord Brown then went on an international campaign of talking to anyone in the media that would listen to him with respect to their story.
Other alleged misrepresentations?
I know that was a key one.
So if there's a bad explosion and you have a whole bunch of cases, mass tort cases, if the CEO goes around and says it's not our fault, we're a good company, then you subject yourself to an apex deposition.
No, sir. I don't think you do.
That's what they're supposed to do, right?
Yes, sir. I agree.
They don't do that because they have unique knowledge. They do that because they're the head of the corporation and they're the one, and somebody's got to go around saying none of it was our fault.
Agree.
So why did that change the circumstances?
I don't think that alone changed the circumstances. I think that BP's, in the court's opinion, the BP course of conduct with respect to what she perceived to be deliberate defiance of her admonitions with respect to the public relations campaign was a factor.
Well, I understand.
But only factor, y'all.
I understand her being upset about the letters to potential jurors. But going around, I'm a little concerned about a judge in South Texas and the First Amendment when a company wants to defend itself in the public press. Okay, well, I'll punish you personally. That's clearly a sanctions order, and we've got to do a lot of things under Transamerica before you do that, right?
Yes, sir, but I don't think that was the case. I think that BP maintained all along that Lord Brown was too busy as an apex officer to get involved in explaining the circumstances of this case. This particular case, and yet Lord Brown injected himself again after he arguably got a partial buy for the prior involvement in the case by injecting himself again on the eve of trial when they were hoping to operate under the presumption that the Rule 11 agreement was going to give him that very buy.
I understand that you did not ask for a hearing to set aside the Rule 11, that the judge did this on her own.
I hate to misspeak, Your Honor, because we've had so many hearings on so many issues, and I personally didn't attend them all, but my recollection and inference from the discussion with people is that this was something that came up at the hearing with respect to just asking to go forward on the depo itself, and that was the one-hour time frame under the Rule 11.
After you noticed?
Yes, sir, after it had been noticed. And again, the re-noticing the deposition, and part of the reason it was to 1 hour in the first place, there's a lot of history here. We were about to go to trial in the first major case, and there were there were a lot of time constraints of taking these depositions, particularly in Europe, in London, and being prepared for trial at the same time. And that also involved, as part of the negotiations, John Manzoni, the number two person, coming to Chicago, even though he resided in London, and that the Lord Brown deposition would be shorter, and it would be by telephone because of the time involved in going back over to London and setting it all up. So that was part of it. And some of those reasons dissipated as a result of the fact that the case was continued. And the case was continued, as petitioner noted, as a result of some additional allegations that basically were that there were falsified documents with the TCEQ with respect to the operation of that particular unit.
Is there currently a trial setting? Just
yes, trial settings are ongoing. In fact, we had trial settings in February. We just got out of trial for one that lasted about a month. And there's one set, I think November is the next setting. And there's still hundreds and hundreds of cases pending that would benefit from whatever Lord Brown would have to say with respect to these matters.
I'm sorry. What impact, yes, if any, does you not being able to take his deposition have on your case?
You know, you could say it doesn't have any impact. But my personal belief is that if a CEO admits to a number of things, it has more power and influence on a jury than it would coming from that CEO's underlings. And we know from what we've seen at this point and things developed in the case that Lord Brown was highly involved in a number of issues. First and foremost, and the key issue in this case, in my opinion, has always been, why did this plant blow up? And it blew up because Lord Brown was personally involved in making a across-the-board budget cut where he ordered all these plants to cut their budget, their operational budget, 25% and sustain it. It's unheard of. The plant managers that accommodated him kept their jobs. The plant managers that resisted were demoted.
He ordered that reduction across all plants?
Yes, sir. Across the entire...
Were there explosions at any other plants?
Sir?
Were there explosions at any other plants?
Yes, sir. There have been. The pipeline's another example. And that's part of the problem. And the CSB, the Chemical Safety and Hazard Investigation Board, found and determined through a very thorough review of mostly the records we obtained in discovery and some of their independent investigation, that it was the budget cuts that compromised the infrastructure of the entire BP operations, in particular Texas City. And there were many root causes. There were many causes, but one of them was the open ventilation systems were 50 years old, had been scheduled to be replaced. So these things didn't vent the atmosphere and were constantly taken out of the budget because of that budget reduction. The board operators, there were two. They reduced it to one, even during shutdowns and startups. And that was directly attributable to the budget cut. We traced all that back to the 1999 budget cut. And at Texas City, as a result of Lord Brown's orders to cut your budget, at Texas City, George Carter and Tim Scruggs sat there and went line item. And we have all those documents. What we're going to cut.
Sounds like you've got a great case. Why do you need the CEO to come and say that's not what happened? Do you suspect for some reason he's going to come and say, you're right, we were bad?
No, Your Honor, and that's a good point. It is an incredible case. I've never seen a case like it. It's an incredible case.
But you all can go to trial, and all we're here about is whether to continue holding this thing up for this apex deposition for stuff you already know about.
It hasn't held it.
What do you think is going to happen?
First, Your Honor, it hasn't held it up. We've gone to trial, in our opinion, successfully without his testimony. But the question is, should a CEO get a walk just because there's a lot of other damning information? That's not the standard for APEX. This man, in my opinion, is a wrongdoer of the high sorts. He was personally warned over and over many of the problems that this budget cut would cause. He is a liar under oath and was fired by BP for lying to another court about a homosexual relationship with a young boy that he found on the internet. That's who this man is. There's no reason for our courts to protect him.
Counsel, you disagree with the El Paso case?
El Paso health care, Your Honor?
Now that he's gone, you think he ought to be subject to deposition like anyone else, I take it?
Yes, sir, if that's what that case really stands for. And I'm not really sure, again, because of the timeline involved. But
let me just ask you then, do you believe once he's gone, he ought to be subject to deposition like anybody else, period?
We could say that in this case, yes, sir. But, again, there are additional mitigating circumstances, one of which is that when he resigned as CEO, he no longer had any transitional issues associated with the company. He didn't stay there to help with transition. He was no longer occupied in handling the affairs at BP. So it's a clean severance. In fact, it appears that he spent the next 6 months after that resignation sending out resumes. And certainly there were ample opportunities there to do it. Also, if you look at his course of conduct, he is, by his constant injecting himself into this case, has demonstrated ample opportunities to talk to us. He's given media conferences.
And none of the other hundreds of trials that are pending are on hold awaiting our decision in this matter, right?
No, sir. That's correct.
If Mr. Brown had ignored the explosion, would your position be that he's derelict in duties for ignoring something important at his company? I'm trying to figure out what you think a CEO should do. Certainly not ignore it, but you don't think he should be doing what Mr. Brown did either.
Well, if he does what this particular CEO did, I'm not saying where you should or shouldn't, but this particular CEO handpicked the investigators, had all the investigators, internal and external investigators, in their comprehensive reports. He picked them and had them report to him the findings. He was involved even at that level. He personally picked the replacement plant manager for this plant. And the refining operations are just one of many operations of BP, and he wears many hats. Yet he just kept this hat on for so long, where he constantly injected himself personally into the issues and operations of that facility before the explosion, during the explosion, and for the 2 years after the explosion.
Chief, one other question. We started some time ago you started to answer the question, Justice Heck's question, about what new was found out about Mr. Brown's unique knowledge arising from Mr. Manzoni's deposition.
Okay, we know that Mr. Manzoni was not able to answer a number of questions.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
What new was found out about Mr. Brown's unique knowledge after you took, or from Mr. Manzoni's deposition?
Okay.
What new and unique that Mr. Brown could talk about related to discoverable information in this case?
We know that, and again, maybe I'm not even on the same page with it, but we know that Manzoni could not explain to us anything about the budget cut.
Okay, let me try to explain it differently, because it looks like we're on different planes. Okay, up to the point of Mr. Manzoni's deposition, there had been many depositions, a lot of discovery taken, correct?
Yes, sir.
As I read the Rule 11 agreement, Mr. Brown's deposition, the parties agreed, was not going to be taken unless, from Mr. Manzoni's deposition, there was new information that disclosed what Mr. Brown knew uniquely about this case. That is, Mr. Manzoni's deposition had to disclose things that was unknown from all the discovery up to that point. Okay, and this had to be unique to Mr. Brown. Is that a fair...
Yes, sir.
I
understand where you're going from. And I think, and it's probably my fault to some degree with respect to that Rule 11 agreement. It could be read, strictly construed, that we were looking for only brand new evidence. It was not our intention. It was certainly not my intention to mean that if he couldn't explain the key issues. And the key issue all along with us was more than all the other things, more than what he was told at the incident scene or anything else, what was known about. And how can you enlighten us about this budget cut? And Manzoni knew nothing about it.
Okay.
That was a key
factor.
And
I'm just looking at your Rule 11 agreement, and you say maybe you interpreted it differently, but it says new evidence. that's why I'm asking what new, not old, new.
Anything that was uncovered in Manzoni's deposition that we did not know about before?
That related to Mr. Brown's unique knowledge about discoverable facts in this case?
Probably just the dovetailing, Your Honor, of the things that we had already been looking for that Manzoni could not answer.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Counsel.
Yes, sir. Thank you all.
On some of the discussion that's gone before.
Counsel, let me ask a question.
Certainly.
Representation was made that about six months after Lord Brown left as CEO, he didn't have a whole lot to do. Is that anywhere in the record that you agree or disagree with that representation?
Your Honor, I think we're outside the record, way outside the record, and talking
outside
about
the record.
Yes, sir. Okay. Yes, sir.
But I thought you said during your argument that there was a period of time where he was looking for a job, right? And so there was a period of time, theoretically, that he wouldn't have fallen under any Apex protection.
There was a point at which he was not employed. He was still on the board of some – he was still on boards, various boards of various companies, but he was not, to my knowledge, employed as a CEO-type person.
That's important, I think, for the analysis of whether or not there's a protection that flows after his first job to the next job, if there's any window, a period of time where he's not protected.
Right, and I just didn't want to say that I knew what he was doing day to day. All I can tell you is that he
follow up a little on, if you have someone who's not an Apex person,
mm-hmm.
Involved in a case such as this, and they leave the company and they become an Apex person instead of Company A, they leave Company A, and they become an Apex for Company B. Is it your position then that because they are now Apex at Company B, we have to apply the Apex rules to them in the explosion or accident over at Company A?
No, and let me tell you why.
Why would we do it in this case?
Because he wouldn't have been an A. Our premise is he wasn't Apex.
Was not Apex,
right,
to start with.
And so that means that he would have had unique or superior. He would have had more knowledge than unique or superior, right? He would have had something to add to.
Well, I don't know. I'm just going to the question of the fact that the person is now an Apex in a different company. How does that enter into it? I'm struggling with that. Why do we let Company B, putting this person in as an Apex, affect what happened before? That's what I'm
And I'm not sure that it would. I'm not sure that it would, because what my position is that when all we're talking about is Apex and number one company, that's what should stick. And I'm not trying to say the rule is no matter whenever in your career you become an Apex official, boom, you can't give any discovery.
Just retired. Why should the Apex protection continue after somebody retires?
Well, I struggled with that a little bit, but to try to make a logical rule that we can live with, Your Honor, are we going to say that you can depose someone when he's at the end of his career and he's retiring, but you can't depose him if he's in the middle of his career?
Well, and that's why not? The argument is they're no longer trying to hold up the company. Ha-ha, we'll show you if you don't settle with us, we'll waste a bunch of time of your key executives. But if they're wasting a bunch of time of retirees...
Well, and then, you know, it's all a weighing, Your Honor. You know, if at some point the harassment level, because he's retired and on the golf course, the harassment level to him is not quite as much. Perhaps, or excuse me, the undue burden to the company isn't quite as much because you're not taking him out of their business.
Right.
It's not to say that the harassment value...
Why do we keep doing it after?
Well, that's like Sam Walton retires and he gets to be deposed in 1,000 slip and fall cases. Well, he didn't have anything else to do. But the truth of the matter is the only reason they want Sam Walton is for harassment purposes.
Well,
the little bit of undue burden that still comes to the company.
It's always subject to relevancy. I mean, you can move to quash on the basis that he doesn't know anything about this. I mean, you have the same rules that still apply, that we don't just go out and spend a lot of money and harass people in general, but that's different from Apex considerations, isn't it?
Right, it is, because in Apex you assume that you're not going to get to depose them unless they have unique or superior knowledge.
Right. But you always have the relevancy. If Sam Walton didn't know anything about a slip and fall in California because he was in Europe all that time, well, you've always got the relevancy objection to quash, right?
Well, you do, but here's the problem we have, and you heard it from the argument, and that is because Sam Walton knew about budget cuts. Well, then we're going to have him deposed in any case where we can articulate a reason or come up with a reason that budget cuts, or if you'd had more money, you might not have had the slip and fall. And so the reason they want Sam Walton is not to make the case go forward. The reason they want Sam Walton is for other purposes. If I can just make one point before I sit down, Your Honor.
Is that I can understand why Walmart would want to protect Walton, but when you fired the CEO, does that make it a little different in this case?
Well, our CEO quit. He wasn't fired. And I don't think, principally, it should make a reason. I don't think so.
Are there further questions?
Yes. You wanted to make one point?
You want to make your point?
I'm sorry. I just wanted to respond. I apologize to what Justice Brister said about sanctions. Yes, indeed, there is no evidence of any sort of public comments tainting the jury pool by Brown going to visit people in California, Illinois, and Ohio who, not surprisingly, will not be on a Galveston County jury and will not be in the jury pool.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel. The cause is submitted. That concludes the arguments for this morning, and the marshal will adjourn the court.
All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned.